You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning. Welcome to Matinaire on Air. My name is Greg Bach. I am your host, your friend, your pal, and you are listening to us on the Civic Media Radio Network right now. It's me today here, sitting in the big chair as usual. I've got Calvin Butenhoff on the boards. Good morning, Calvin. How are you feeling today?
You know, I'm still congested, but I feel more focused today.
Focused. That's great. Well, I'm glad to have you here. I'm glad you're feeling better. You've got that deep, gravelly, post-sick voice that we all get and hope for so we can sound like late-night radio guys. But we have a great show for you today. Coming up at 9:35, we've got a modern war expert, Zachary Callenborn, here to talk about the current state of global warfare here here in America and around the globe. We'll be having a very interesting conversation. This is something we really haven't discussed before this deeply. And with, you know, we've spoken to generals, we've spoken to members of the military, but this is an expert on, and he's been quoted and interviewed in many, many publications. So I'm very much looking forward to that discussion with Zachary at 9:35 after the bottom of the hour news. At 10:06, we have Civic Media's genie of just about everything, Terry Barr, on the show. We will be talking about the story she has put out recently that you can find by going to civicmedia.us/news, civicmedia.us/news. You can find all the stories we're working on there from a wonderful group of reporters and journalists that we have right here at Civic Media. But that's where you can find them, civicmedia.us/news. And then after the 10:30 news break, we are going to be speaking with Adam Hess from WRCO. He's back. We're going to be discussing and continuing our discussion, actually, of a very important, especially with the end of the year, Calvin, this is a very important topic we wanted to cover, which is his old-fashioned recipe. And if you have a cocktail, a mocktail, your own version of the old-fashioned that you want to share, send it in to us. Go ahead. You can text it in. You can call it in, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You can also leave a comment here on the live stream. What is it that you imbibe on New Year's Eve? Is it a glass of champagne? Is it an old-fashioned? Is it neither? Do you keep it dry and keep it simple and A-style? But we want to know what you are going to be having to cheers the 2026 into existence. We'll be talking to Adam Hess at 10:35. And then at the end of the show, we're going to do a little bit different. I guess it could be a this shouldn't be a thing. I would say year so fast edition because, you know, the year, I mean, we're here. It's the 30th of December, by the way. Happy birthday, Cully. Happy birthday, Molly. And it's gone by fast. So I'm going to share with you my thoughts on 2025, a couple ideas, but I want to know from you as well. Let me know your thoughts on 2025. Do you leave this year behind with some hope? Do you leave it with some trepidation? Have you accomplished something? Have you work towards a goal? I want to know what you have thought of 2025. You can drop that on the text line. You can put that in the live stream. You can call in later in the show. We're happy to read out the messages. And you can also leave a voice note doing that by downloading the Civic Media app. It is absolutely free. That's a pun for you this early in the morning. But you can get the Civic Media app. You can use that app to call, to text. You can leave a voice note. You don't even have to like me to leave a voice note. That's fine. But also you can use it to, you can listen to live stream our music stations, our talk stations. You can get your news. And what's great is you can also participate in our text to win contest when those happen. We have nothing going on right now, but sooner than later, we will announce a brand new multi-state text to win contest for you all. And you can be a part of that fun by downloading the Civic Media app. So yes, what are you going to be drinking on New Year's Eve? I want to know that. Thoughts on old fashions? Do you have hard opinions? Sweet, sour? Do you, you know, that kind of thing? I want to know because that's a divisive issue here in Wisconsin especially. And then also your thoughts on 2025. You can do all that by contacting us. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to make you part of the conversation on this, our last live show, by the way, of the year. We are in the studio right now. We are in Radio Park in Racine. But tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday, we will have a bevy of curated best of episodes where we're going to be letting you in on some of our favorite moments from the year, our interviews, our discussion. Jane will be making an appearance in these pre-recorded content bits, and we hope you stick around for those. But tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday, we will be out of the office, kicking up our feet, welcoming in the new year, and getting ready for a wonderful, wonderful 2026 here on the show, here for you on Civic Media. But we absolutely adore you being a part of our show, being giving of your time, because we know it's precious and we know you could be listening to someone else, but you want to listen to me because I'm pretty cool. You're pretty cool too. So I want to start with something here, not so much different, but I want to get into a discussion with you, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, and I want you to be unvarnished, and I want you to be honest, and I also understand if you completely disagree with me. There was a story published in the New York Times yesterday by Robert Draper. He covers politics for the Times. It is titled, "I Was Just So Naive, Inside Marjorie Taylor Greene's Break with Trump." And I want you to go with me on this one because I have some thoughts, and they echo and reflect the beliefs that we have talked about on this show since we started it nearly 3 years ago when Jane was at the helm in the big chair. But I wanted to address the topic of those who are or were mega strong, those who have doubts. How do we, as I believe myself to be pro-democracy, how do we approach them? How do we help them? How do we assist them? How do we be a part of their lives that is growth for them and for us? So I had some thoughts on it, and I want you to go with me, as I said. And I hope that you will, because I hope and I believe that you trust me on this. And one of the big questions that we always get and we think about here on the show, and we've had discussions with varying senses of optimism, is how do I reach them? Them being those who are mega strong, whether they are family, friends, how do I reach them? And I'm going to be honest, and you might not like this answer, but it is the truth. You can't. You cannot completely. You can't do it completely, and you can't do it on your own. They have to see the problems within this movement. They want to have to break away. They want to have to find something. They need to have that within them. As someone who has struggled with various problems as far as, like, you know, weight loss and smoking and drinking, you have to want to make a change. I cannot be forced to do anything that only makes you push away. How long does that take? It's a case by case for every person. And it really depends on if it's the guy down the street or someone you see on TV like Marjorie Taylor Greene. But I ask this of you. If you meet someone, if you know someone who's starting to show doubt, please do not handle them with cynicism. It doesn't help. Skepticism is fine. Be skeptical. I am skeptical. Skeptical. That is not a problem. But cynicism doesn't help anyone ever. This article in the New York Times really goes into, and I'm not going to break down every single paragraph. I'm going to put it in the show notes so you can read it yourself. I really hope you do. I hope you share it and have discussions on this, because I think what this article will do is challenge the reader to say, come on, man, this is real. We live in cynical times. It's easier to approach a situation with cynicism because we've seen it so many times before where somebody, you know, somebody criticizes Trump, Trump criticizes them, and then everything's fine in a week and we move on and nothing, it's like nothing has happened. But I want you to read the article. And I want to make another point too here is I'm not going to defend Marjorie Taylor Greene on her, on a lot of her opinions. I differ wildly on them. I will not defend the things she has said to other people as far as calling into question their patriotism. But what I do want to talk about is a person who was a pillar in the MAGA movement and showing that someone like her, if she can show doubt, if she can show concern, if she can ask questions, that means there are other people out there who can do it as well. and maybe already are, but don't have the, they're afraid of being found out. I don't want to say them the guts. I don't want to say that. I want to just say, when you entrench yourself in something so deep and something that requires so much loyalty, to have doubt, to have any sort of consternation inside about what your party or your movement represents, it may be hard to talk about it. She still does and says things in which I completely disagree, but I disagree with my uncles and my cousins a lot. But I still open door to them when they come to dinner or they need my help. Going to be turning pages here because I wrote this all out for you. I know that for some of you, if you read this or if you read the article, you see her interviews and you hear my words, you can say it's easy, convenient, and this is all a ploy. This is all, you know, this is all to save face. And I get that completely. I understand why you might say that. We live, as I said, in cynical times, and we've seen people turn coat to better themselves, to enrich themselves. But to a certain extent, I get that. I get where she's coming from as well, because working for Civic Media and doing this show, I have been called a mouthpiece for the left. I've been called Antifa terrorist. I've been horrible things have been said about my opinions and my personal life. And so I understand what it's like. I've also been criticized when we don't go hard enough on the Trump administration. And even more so when we criticize the left at all. So I understand critique, but this, what she is doing, what has happened over the past few months have come with a price. She has faced intense media scrutiny on both sides. She has received death threats to her and her family. And that's something that I don't have to deal with. I'm thankful that I'm not that well known. I don't want to be famous like that. She has been shunned by the movement and the president. She laid down on train tracks for repeatedly for nearly a decade. A president who 4 years ago called her a, quote, warrior and always been with Trump in an endorsement tweet he made for her when she was running for Congress. And 1 year ago, she stood in Milwaukee and voiced completely and without doubt her belief and her endorsement in then candidate Trump at the National Convention for the Republicans. But now, at the end of 2025, something I think none of us would have thought is that on our bingo card, Marjorie Taylor Greene is not MAGA enough. And we're going to take a moment. We're going to grab some snacks. We're going to grab some water. We're going to come on back. I'd love to hear from you. I'm going to continue into this. I want to discuss this some more. I thought about this a lot over the year, and I feel like this article in the New York Times by Robert Draper really puts in perspective my thoughts on how to approach people in this situation, how we can all grow, be better, move forward, because we all believe in democracy and this country. Don't go anywhere. My name is Greg. I am your host. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned, stay informed, stay close.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Bach. I'm your host, and you are listening to us on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can always call, get in contact with us, text, or call the same number, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream. We are on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform we still call Twitter. Lots of great show ahead, including Zachary Callenborn coming up after the 9:30 break. We've got Terry Barr stopping by, as well as Adam Hest in the second hour. And we're going to be talking about our mocktails, our drinks of choice for New Year's, as well as our thoughts on 2025 in that second hour. So don't go anywhere. We were talking about the article in the New York Times by Robert Draper. I was just so naive inside Marjorie Taylor Greene's break with Trump. And before I get back into my thoughts on this, I've written them down. They're on paper. I mean, can you believe it? And pen. That's not digital at all. I want to throw it to Gene real quick. Gene, good morning. How are you doing? Happy almost New Year. And what say you today?
Right back at you. And I agree with you 100% because I have been a real strong critic of all of her behaviors in the past. Mm-hmm. And my background's psych. So anyway, when I saw her come out of that meeting with those women, mm-hmm. when they heard the stories, I saw something in her face, some of the other women that were there, that I'd never seen before.
Yeah.
And I could not believe. And I couldn't believe, watch her. There's a change there.
Yes.
And I agree with you 100%. Years ago, I followed, you know, I was politically involved and supported somebody that totally did not tell the truth.
Yeah.
And that hurts like the dickens.
Yes, it does.
And I'm a little different than her, and I wasn't the main woman. Remember, she was the main woman. He built her up so big. Mm-hmm. And, you know, remember, he utilized a lot of psychological manipulation on the public. You know, when I saw Saturday Night Live, when he tweeted people, you know, when they're eating at their dinner table, they really poke fun at it, but it was really real.
Yeah.
That he connected like nobody else did, like he loved the people.
Absolutely.
So anyway, great job. Keep it up.
Thank you very much,
Jean. I give her kudos. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Thank you so much, Jean. I appreciate that. I really do, because it's easy. I feel like there are people out there who can say, well, why are you shilling for Marjorie Taylor Greene? And I'm not. I'm just being as honest as I can be. We were talking about the fact that a person who even, you know, 6 months ago was seen as one of the mega strongholds in that movement is now essentially not welcome. She's not MAGA enough, which is a sentence we have said many times over the past plus, you know, year plus. We have said that there comes a time when you are not MAGA enough. And I ask those out there who might be listening, who may have concerns or questions, but support Donald Trump. It doesn't matter how many hats you own. Doesn't matter how much money you gave to him. Doesn't matter how many times you voted for him, how many T-shirts you own. Doesn't matter how many times you try to break into conversation and try to tell people how great he is. There could be a moment where you are not enough. And she is the example of what happens when you are no longer enough. She was a titan in the GOP MAGA movement. It all came to a head because she asked questions and she had disagreements, which appeared when the values and opinions she holds and she voiced didn't align with Trump and his acolytes. Opinions like a surprising view on the conflict between Israel and Palestine. She came out and called it a genocide. I don't know if people understand the gravity of someone like her saying those words. That is huge. She has had also a very un-GOP attitude towards tariffs, towards cryptocurrency, and she was not happy. She was very upset that the ACA subsidies were not extended because a lot of people in her district probably benefit from them. A lot of people in many districts benefit, and they are represented by Republicans, and that bothered her as well. But what is shocking and, I'm sorry, not shocking, is sad and not shocking at all, is a shift in an opinion regarding the release of the Epstein files. She has been fervent and absolutely steadfast in her belief that the Epstein files should be released. It is a position that the GOP, the MAGA movement, championed last year and into this year. But where she stands vigilant now, many luminaries in the MAGA movement have changed their tune, whether we're talking influencers, podcasters, pundits, and White House officials. And by the way, all those titles can describe outgoing assistant FBI director Dan Bongino, who made it his life's mission to release those files. And now he's not as vocal, but she still is. And there's a price that gets paid because of that. I really want to read this quote really quick regarding one of her main moments. And that happened after the death of Charlie Kirk. She said, after Charlie died, I realized that I'm part of the toxic culture. I really started to look at my faith. I wanted to be more like Christ. Does she really mean it? I don't know. I can't read minds, which really contradicts my uncle's theories on the COVID vaccination. But the last few months have shown a person willing to push back on huge issues within her party. And I also know that's where we can also push back with our cynicism. And I ask you not for two reasons. One, you don't like it when they do it to us. You don't like it when MAGA pushes back on what we want to talk about with cynicism and derision. So we shouldn't do that. Two, when you push back on them, the one step they took towards us and being pro-democracy and being part of the fight, you push them back two steps and they might go back to originally where they were in the first place. And that doesn't help anyone. I'll close it with this really quick. I'm not going to call Marjorie Taylor Greene a liberal icon. I'm not going to call her the future. But I believe she is brave. I believe she is a patriot. And I ask that you would approach situations like this, whether it's her, the situation that you're learning about, or situations on your own with people you know and love, the same way that you would approach your cousin or your uncle, the ones who drive you crazy at Thanksgiving. I ask you to please don't close the door on them. Welcome them in. Have a conversation. When we come back, we'll be speaking to Zach Callenborn, who is a modern expert on global warfare. We'll be talking about the state of global warfare, and we still got lots of great show ahead of you. Don't go anywhere. Grab a snack. Grab some water. You are amazing. Keep asking questions. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned. Stay informed. Stay close. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. I am your host. My name is Greg Bach, and you are listening to us on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you want to call or text, get in touch, you can do that by using that same number. It's 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You can also leave that comment on the live stream by reaching out on Facebook, YouTube, or the platform in this house we still call Twitter. Deal with it. But also, you can leave a voice note if you have the Civic Media app, and you can get in touch. In the second hour, we'll be talking to Terry Barr, the Civic Media's genie of just about everything, discussing the story she's been working on, what you can read on civicmedia.us/news, as well as Adam Hess returning from WRCO, one of our stations here in Richland Center, talking about the New Year's and specifically old fashions and his cocktail recipe that is also on civicmedia.us/news. And we want to know from you two things. One, what will you be imbibing this New Year's Eve? Will it be champagne? Will it be an old fashioned? Will it be an NA model of some sort, whether it's beer or soda? We respect all drinks. And also your thoughts on 2025. What are your takeaways? What are your highs, your lows? How are you approaching 2026? We want to hear from you. You can do all of that by reaching out to us via the website, via the phone number, live stream. But we want to hear from you, and we look forward to those discussions in the 10 o'clock hour. But now we're going to move the discussion to a topic that, honestly, like, usually a lot of times what happens, there's things where I'm like, oh, I have a basic understanding of what this is. But today, I'm going to be just as in the fight with you guys as far as learning and understanding, because today we are talking to Zachary Callenborn, who is a Master's of Philosophy PhD student in War Studies at King's College London. He is also affiliated with the University of Oxford, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, George Mason University, and the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. Please welcome to the show to talk to us about the state of modern and global warfare, Zach Callenborn. Good morning, Zach. How are you doing today, my friend?
Thank you for having me. And it's great to be on. I actually grew up outside of Madison, so I'm living in the UK at the moment. So yeah. But it's fun to, you know, go back to the homestead, as it were, to talk about things I've been thinking about for a long time.
Well, speaking of Wisconsin, I want to get something very clear. I want to recognize someone very close to you. Your father is listening. He is a fan of Civic Media, and I want to give a shout out to Mr. Callenborn, I assume. Mr. Callenborn?
Yeah. Bernie Callenborn, and I hope he's listening in and enjoys it.
Oh, what a Wisconsin. Bernie Callenborn. That's a guy I would buy a car from. Now, one of the things I want to point out is in my prep for this, I was watching a podcast, which is weird. We watch podcasts now for Newswise. And you said in the intro that you are a man of many titles. Really quick, did I cover all of your titles?
Most of them. Okay. I will say one of my favorite is an officially proclaimed U.S. Army mad scientist. And that is, in fact, an official title. I have a certificate signed by a one-star general with all the rights, privileges, and authorities that come with it, of which there are none other than to say that I am an Army mad scientist. But that's the one that matters.
I feel like the right that you have is if you tell people I'm an Army mad scientist, then you should be able to, like, put your fingers together and just have a very diabolical laugh. You are afforded that that in your title. So really quick, you know, I'm reading up on this. You know, as I said earlier, I am not super adept at this topic. I think a lot of people aren't, if you ask me honestly. I think what we know is what we see on the news and what we see in movies and TV. And an article that was written, an opinion piece in the New York Times that said this is the future of war, kind of lays out a situation that made me go, well, what is the current state of global warfare and the defense there when they were talking about a meeting between President Xi and President Biden at the time. And after they had left the room, President Xi's bodyguards started spraying everything so they couldn't collect DNA. That sounds like something out of a movie, but that's something that's very real, which makes me beg the question is, how has war and the defense and the prevention changed over time from what we know to where we are now? How has it changed, and what are the biggest developments to fight those wars?
Yeah, I would say, I guess the question is, how far back do you think would you be interested in going? I mean, we could talk about nuclear weapons. We can talk about some of the recent changes. I would say certainly in terms of what's happening in modern warfare, we're certainly recognizing a much greater information basis on multiple levels, and particularly with the growing importance of computing, where modern battlefields were collecting tremendous amounts of information about what's actually happening. To some degree, it's becoming increasingly transparent with what's happening, for example, in the front lines of Ukraine, where achieving surprise tends to be a much more difficult thing than it has been in the past, because there are so many different sensors, from satellites to drones to just people, you and I, on social media, you know, clicking the camera and say, hey, look, there's a Russian tank over here, guys, see what's going on. Some of the big changes that are happening, though, are particularly when it comes to robotics and drones, what's been happening recently, where in the case of Ukraine and the Russian conflict, some of these quite literally just commercial drones that you and I can go just, I'd say Walmart, but now I'm realizing I don't know where a Walmart is nearby. But, you know, you all in Wisconsin can,
it's next to the Thames. I made a reference, local reference. You're welcome. There you go.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, yeah. So you go down to just a Walmart and get a DJI, for example, for a few $100s, and you can modify one of those systems and equip it with a bomb, and you can carry out potentially militarily significant attacks. And we've seen both sides in the conflict between Ukraine and Russia use quite literally these same simple drones to carry out a variety of attacks against tanks, infantry, command posts, and other types of systems. Those systems are also very useful for collecting information, where they could just, each of these simply just have a camera on it. So you can fly and look and like, oh, hey, look, there's a tank over there. And that can be used to either, hey, let's watch out, I don't want to get shot by that tank. Or it could, say, be used to relay information to other howitzers, missiles, other types of things to, you know, go blow up whatever asset that's available. And importantly, these are being used at mass and at scale, and potentially for decisive effect. There's a recent conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan a few years ago over a strip of land, the Nagorno-Karabakh, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, basically a strip of land between Armenia and Azerbaijan. And Azerbaijan was using a number of high-end drones to very significant effect. These were Turkish-provided Bayraktar TB2s. They're not like a DJI, which is, you know, maybe a 6 inches, footish long. These are wingspans of, like, I don't know, 10, 15 feet, something along those lines. But the Azeris using these systems were able to decimate the Armenians because they didn't have any real capability to shoot down these systems. And so what ended up happening is the Armenians fairly quickly ended up surrendering in the conflict because they just really didn't have any way to systems. And so it was a significant harm. And the Pentagon and others all across the world are kind of grappling with, okay, what do we take from this? What does it mean for the future of the U.S. military power and the conflicts that we tend to talk about? And so a lot of folks all around the world are struggling to think through this. I don't want to say revolution, but to some it is definitely a revolution. And there's definitely some strong arguments that that's what's going on.
If you're just joining us on Matt and Aaron Air, we're speaking to Zachary Kallenborn, who is a modern warfare expert. He is a man of many titles, including a mad scientist for the U.S. Army. And we're talking about the state of modern global warfare. And I think something, Zach, that you just said that was very, that you asked leads me to my next question, which you said, how far back do you want me to go as far as the development of modern warfare? And I think that's an important thing, because, like, you say that I can walk into a Walmart and buy a drone and cause significant damage for a couple $100s, but I couldn't walk into Walmart and buy a tank or the military equipment that's available then and now. But it seems like my question would be is, what is the military here, at least in America, doing to delineate itself from the things you can buy at Walmart versus the things they are using as far as drone capability? Because if that's the case, then why are not more combatants just walking into Walmart and doing that versus what does the America have to protect themselves from by using a better form of firepower that is only available to them, if that makes sense? I'm just trying to understand like the difference, because that's a frightening scenario to say like, yeah, I can walk into Walmart and buy this and I'm off to the races.
Yeah, so there's a couple different dimensions that are worth unpacking. There's sort of the U.S. security, like homeland element, how we think about, say, terrorists. And there's also sort of the military risks in terms of how our soldiers face threats abroad. And they're similar, but there's different dynamics to both of those. I'm going to talk briefly about both. So when it comes to like homeland threats, part of the issue is, although, yes, you can buy the drone fairly easily, I would hope that you don't have just a bomb hanging out in your closet. Now, if you do, maybe not best to say, but, you know, generally speaking, that takes a little bit more capability to arm the drone and weaponize it. And so what ends up happening is, at least for terrorist actors, they have, at least in the United States, a lot of various options. Terrorists, for example, have been quite frequently using just guns, for example, where you just go buy a gun and then shoot people. In other cases, folks have, for example, just gotten rental cars and then drive it through a crowd. It's horrible, but it's a relatively simple way that folks can cause significant amounts of harm. So even though this technology does provide real advantages, there are also trade-offs. That $600 drone that you're going to get also is a relatively small payload. So like, it can carry a few pounds of explosives, which can be very devastating. But if I can just get a gun and then shoot up a bunch of people, you know, the horrible blood-soaked calculus that it is, like, it's a more effective means to cause harm if that's what one wants to do. That said, there have been a couple cases in the United States where people have tried to weaponize drones. In the military context, it tends to be very different. We have seen numerous attacks on U.S. soldiers abroad, in the Middle East, for instance, from the Islamic State, where and other terrorist groups, where the Islamic State, for example, ran, I think it was like 300 drone sorties during the course of a month. So basically 300 drone attacks. I think that's inclusive of collecting information, but basically, you know, 300 attacks on soldiers. And I don't know that there's been significant direct harm to soldiers, but certainly there's a psychological effect of, you know, soldiers having to be constantly aware and ready to deal with this threat.
In the few minutes we have in this part of the segment, I just want to know, like, where is it going from here? Is the development, I mean, it's just, it seems like drones are here to stay. It's a way of also making sure we're not putting people up in the air to do this work. Is there anything that it's headed towards that should give us pause or we should know about that just keeps us informed as a people?
Yeah, so there's a few elements. There's certainly the ubiquity of technology. Just because terrorists have not used these systems yet doesn't mean that they won't. You know, if we briefly look at the huge history of warfare, one of the general observations that we see is warfare tends to be a constantly iterative and evolving thing. What might be significant tomorrow might be trivial today. And that, you know, might be relevant, you know, have never been significant in the past. And so we've seen, for example, cartels and gangs increasingly use these drones to carry out attacks on one another. Like, that's fairly significant. Even if it may not threaten you or I, like, just the fact that we have weaponized drones flying around is potentially quite concerning. The U.S. military and others are also trying to think through, what does this mean, and try to think through, what do we look at scale, where in Ukraine, Russia, for example, they fielded literally millions of drones. Is that something that we need to have? And how does that look for the conflicts that we have in China, or potential conflicts with China? Namely, if we have a potential war against China, that we have a huge ocean in the way. And so how do we get those millions of drones over to fight in the Taiwan Strait? That's a big, and honestly, I think it's an open challenge. We don't really have good solutions to that.
Well, I want to talk about this as far as drone technology right here in Wisconsin with a new article out of the Wisconsin Examiner talking about something going through Madison and the concerns therein as far as how we approach drone technology by our police. But we're talking to Zach Kallenborn. He is an expert in modern warfare. We're going to keep the conversation going on the other side of the break. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. Stay close. You're listening to Matt and Aaron Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Bach. I am your host, your buddy, your pal. You are listening to us on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can always get in touch. Call, text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You can always leave a comment on the live stream, too. We are on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that we in this house still call Twitter. Lots of great shows still ahead, including a discussion with Terry Barr, the genie of just about everything here at Civic Media, about the stories she has put out in the past few weeks, including some stuff regarding reaching out and helping those who need help during the holidays and any time of the year. And then Adam Hess from WRCO, from Richland Center, coming back, talking about an important topic, which, Zach, I mean, you're from Wisconsin, the old fashions. That's a divisive topic. I don't know how the UK feels about it, frankly. If they don't agree with me, you're all wrong, but that's not my point. My point is we'll be talking to him about that, as well as getting our thoughts on 2025, where we are and where we're heading into the new year. But please be part of that conversation. Stick around. We're going to have a lot of great discussions here on the show. We are talking to Zach Kallenborn, who is an expert in modern warfare, and we've been talking about the proliferation of drones, how they are changing in the face of military use and personal use, and how that can cross lines. And something that comes right here to home is an article that was put out by the Wisconsin Examiner earlier this month by Isaiah Holmes, who was actually on the show last week to talk about a story he was working on as well. Isaiah Holmes, great reporter. It says, "Bill to allow police to down drones spurs questions from lawmakers." And essentially, a brief overview for those listening and watching is that this law would allow police officers to down or destroy drones they may feel provide or have a threat to the community, to the area. And it has come under fire. There are a lot of questions. And just as a little piece, there is about $500 million in grants to help move this along, to help, quote, protect the community. And Zach, that's where, you know, it's not modern warfare, but it's definitely, you know, we're talking about drones. And what are your thoughts on things like this? Is this something that, you know, giving the police the ability to not only down and or destroy them, but also making that decision with something I saw here in the story that said bare minimum threats, or like there's a bare minimum evidence on why they might do this? I mean, I guess, what are your thoughts on laws like this?
So in principle, I think devolving authority to state and local law enforcement is generally a good thing. The challenge you run into with potentially hostile drone events is that, you know, if you have a drone that's flying at, say, Camp Randall Stadium, someone's really annoyed that the Badgers are going to win the Rose Bowl or whatever. And, you know,
not this year, buddy. Not this year. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. You know, so this, generally speaking, the drone heads 80 miles per hour or whatever. You know, by the time someone recognizes, oh, there's a drone coming, we need to do something about it, let's call the cops. The cops realize we can't do anything about it, we need to call the federal authorities, which is currently the case under regulations. Only federal authorities are allowed to defeat drones. By the time you go through that process, the drone has already blown up a bunch of people and, you know, caused harm. And so generally speaking, the idea of having that local control, I think, is a good thing in moving that direction. That said, as I said, part of the challenge is that federal regulations do prohibit local and state law enforcement. So I'm not sure the way that this particular bill gets around that issue. I'm not a lawyer, so maybe there are some ways that you can do that.
Yeah.
But at least my understanding is it's pretty strong in terms of federal regulation that law enforcement can't do that. And part of the rationale, and this is kind of where a little bit of the dilemma comes into play, is that one of the common approaches to defending against against adversarial drones is using jammers. Basically, you sever the link between the drone controller and the actual drone itself, and then it, you know, basically returns to home or just stops operating, depending on the model. And so that's a relatively cheap way to defeat them, where you just kind of give out jammers. The problem is that those jammers, they just jam everything that happens to be on that same frequency spectrum as the drone itself, which might include, say, 911 signals or signals between, say, ambulances and communication or other, say, airport signals. So other things that, like, actually kind of also really matter a lot. So, you know, if we have all of these jammers all over the place and law enforcement are just kind of randomly shooting them at anything that they think is a concern, then you're going to potentially jam a whole bunch of other signals that becomes and then so even though you don't you may deal with a couple of drone threats, you know, you've now harmed a bunch of other people because the ambulances can't communicate or whatever, or the police can't get dispatched or fire or something like that. And so you then have a potentially significant secondary harms. And to be honest, I don't know how you deal with that. I think part of it comes dealing with training and making sure that if we're going to give the law enforcement these systems, do they know how they operate? Do they understand the risks that these entail? Are they careful in understanding that, you know, you really don't want to just use it anytime you potentially see a maybe hostile drone? But, you know, when it comes to dealing with the potentially really threatening one, that's a real concern. I think there's also potential value here just in simply communicating that, like, hey, this is an issue that our communities are concerned about, because I do think there needs to be change at the federal level to think better through how we delegate and support these authorities to state and local police. The Biden administration did develop a plan to do that a couple of years ago, you know, back, of course, during the Biden administration. I'm not aware of how that's evolved in the course of the Trump administration. Just the fact that we have this bill suggests that tonight's our with that, which is, you know, they're certainly a reasonable thing to do and just say, hey, we're concerned about this, we need to do something better. And so in that respect, I think absolutely it's a good thing.
I just absolutely just resisted putting my tinfoil hat on because I had so many more questions I'd love to ask you, including, you know, I'd love to have you back on the show, because one thing that we didn't get a chance to discuss, pretty much a part of the conversation, is the fact that AI is now a part of our lives. It's a part of our everything, and how is that going to impact modern global warfare as well. But that's for another time. My friend Zach Caliborn has been our guest. He is an expert in modern warfare around the globe. He's got so many titles, but I want to go with Mad Scientist, as said by the Army. And I want to have you back, Zach. Really appreciate your time and expertise. Thank you so much for being here.
Happy to be back. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. And Mr. Caliborn, I hope it was a good interview. He did great. Any problems, that's my problem. So you have a great New Year, Zach. I'll talk to you hopefully sooner than later. When we come back, we're talking to Terry Barr as well as Adam Hess. Don't go anywhere. More show to come. Matt and Aaron Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned, stay informed, stay close.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.